This is the Future of IP Protection podcast, brought to you by MorphVision. This show is dedicated to arming companies with the skills, know-how, and technology they will need to future-proof their IP protection strategy for the years ahead.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Future of IP Protection podcast. I'm Brandi Spence, Head of Marketing with MorphVision. Today, I'm speaking with Gabriela Bowden, Joint Managing Partner at ePoint. Gabriela, thanks so much for joining me today. I know that we've been talking about having you on the show for a while, and I'm really excited that we've made it happen and looking forward to our chat today.
Thank you so much, Brandi, for this opportunity. I'm very happy to be here with you this morning.
That's great. Well, Gabriela, your journey in the intellectual property field, I know, has been pretty amazing. Can you walk us through your personal and your professional journey, especially your experience at the customs legal department, and then what eventually led you to your role at ePoint? And maybe tell us a little bit about ePoint as well.
Wonderful. Thank you, Brandi. This is a really good question that has actually defined my career. Brandi, I was actually born in Costa Rica. My maternal family is from Costa Rica, and my paternal side of the family is an interesting mix because my great-grandfather was Colombian, and then I have the Cayman Island side of my family. I have two nationalities, so I'm Costa Rican and Caymanian. People from the Cayman Islands are called Caymanians. So I can say that I'm a walking melting pot of culture. I was raised in the Cayman Islands with the ocean as my backyard on one of the most beautiful islands in the world, that has a white sand beach of 7 miles.
Oh, my God.
Living in the Caribbean changes one's perspective on life. And in my case, I'm from a very conservative family, Brandi. I attended the United Church, which is a Presbyterian church. And during my youth, I was heavily involved in the youth group of my church. I am the eldest of four children and have been very disciplined my entire life. And I always knew that I wanted to go into law. So when I graduated from high school, I was sent to law school in Costa Rica, not to the UK, which was kind of weird because the Cayman Islands is a UK dependency.
Right.
So I did law and business all in one here in Costa Rica. And when I graduated, I knew that I wanted to go into IP law. So I tried several times to land an IP job, but it proved to be completely useless for me. So I was hired by the legal department of customs and excise in Costa Rica and worked there for 4 years. And all of the knowledge that I obtained there has actually helped me quite a bit when it comes to understanding how anti-counterfeiting actions are put in place and also the local legislation and border control of counterfeited goods, which is a big area of our IP practice at ePoint. So I had the idea of working in IP, Brandi. And during my years of law school, I had worked at a very small law firm as an IP paralegal in Costa Rica. And that is when I fired my passion for IP. So eventually, I resigned from government at customs and I moved back to the Cayman Islands, where I joined an offshore law firm in their IP department and put my knowledge to practice there. It's funny, but when I was hired by that particular firm, I had to undertake a test because the managing partner of the firm at the time didn't think a local Caymanian knew about IP. And I was even asked, Brandi, to define what WIPO was.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Yes, that's insane. Well, I'm sure you blew them out of the park.
I think so because I was hired by them. And this is completely understandable because in an island in the Caribbean where at the time the IP legislation wasn't very developed, they didn't expect somebody local to know about IP. So I was hired by that firm and I worked for them for 8 years. In 2004, in the Cayman Islands, we went through a hurricane, Hurricane Ivan, and it was a Category 5 hurricane.
I recall that one, yeah.
Yes, it was crazy. And in the aftermath of the hurricane, I broke my leg. And there were no surgeons on island to do a surgery on my foot, but eventually it happened. And a week after my surgery, I had a pulmonary embolism.
So
I was hospitalized in intensive care. And once I recovered, which by the way was a total miracle, I started questioning myself as to what my purpose in life was. And I wanted to transcend. And I knew I didn't want to be just another attorney out of the bunch. So I decided to move back to Costa Rica because I wanted to open my own law firm to do IP in the Caribbean. And the spectrum in the Cayman Islands was a bit limited.
Mm-hmm.
So I was approached by a large firm in Central America to lead their IP global department, but I declined the offer because it didn't actually adjust to what I wanted to do. And then my friend, Aaron Montero, who is currently my partner, came into the scene. And Aaron at the time had founded a small company and he was doing IP mostly in Central America, Brandy. So I was brought on board as a partner and together we started feeding this baby who is now a young adult. So ePoint is my baby and it's one of my most passionate life projects. We went ahead and launched the Caribbean practice here and revamped the Latin American practice as well. And today, ePoint is one of the most important firms in Latin America and the Caribbean IP scenario. We currently have 18 direct offices in Central America and the Caribbean. So we're not an intermediary. We're the real deal because we have a direct presence. And in summary, here I am 15 years later, Brandy. December 1st will mark my 15th year anniversary. And if there's something in life that I'm happy about having joined ePoint. I'm really, really happy here.
Amazing. I mean, what a journey, right? And I really love how out of, you know, a life-changing situation, right, with this pulmonary embolism, like you really reevaluate things and you end up at, you know, where you need to be, right? It's just wonderful to hear that. Just to touch base a little bit for our listeners, like I know we were talking a little bit ahead of time. We share a little bit in common in that I'm also, my family is from Latin America, Panamanian, and my mother, I told you, was born in Costa Rica. So one thing I did not tell you is I too went to law school in Panama, wanted to become a lawyer.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm not as smart as you, Gabriela, nor do I master the Spanish language. I speak it. So yeah, that did not work out for me. So I am by not a lawyer today. So, but I'm always amazed by the amazing stories that people, especially who are handling IP rights, IP law, and the journey that it takes them. And obviously, there's always something that keeps them really passionate towards the topic, right? What is it for you that keeps you incredibly motivated? I mean, you sound like a very passionate person nonetheless, but tell me, what is it about that, about intellectual property that keeps you really excited and motivated?
You know, this is such a really good question, Brandy, because IP is a specific area of law that one must have a passion for in order to practice in this area. And you know, in March of this year, Brandy, I got an email from the local law society here in Costa Rica, and it was an invitation to a cocktail reception for attorneys that had been in practice for 25 years. And it dawned on me that it's been 25 long years since I was admitted as a lawyer. And I said, oh my God, you know, I'm getting old. That's the first thought I had. I said, well, you know, I've grown so much as a professional. And the one thing that really, really amazes me every time is that the IP field is ever changing. And as it changes me as a professional, Brandy. I'm constantly pushed to learn more about new areas of IP. Since my practice encompasses cross-border practice, I am constantly learning about legislation in the Caribbean and Latin America. So as the industries change, new inventions come into place and these new creations must be protected in some way. And this is precisely what excites me about the world of IP, because you have to become very creative in order to guide clients along the way and protect their creations adequately in so many jurisdictions.
Oh, I like that. You have to be very creative to do that. I want to go back to that in a minute, but this is a perfect segue, as you were talking about given your 25 years, your vast expertise, and having to stay on top of it because it is ever changing. How do you see, how would you assess the current state of IP protection as it stands today, especially considering perhaps the global and the regional nuances?
Right. Thank you for this question. Latin America overall has strong legislation. And this is precisely true in countries like Colombia, Argentina, Brazil, And in Central America, most legislation is very similar. It's updated. I can say it's at a good standard. But in the Caribbean, it's a whole new world, Brandy. There are islands that are the most updated ones legislation-wise. For example, I can mention Jamaica, Belize, Barbados, the Cayman Islands, that they updated their legislation in 2017, and now Bermuda, which is in the process of enacting a new IP trademark law. So therefore, not one country is identical to another, and this is especially true in this region of the world. There is a group of countries that are French-speaking, for instance. Others are Spanish Caribbean jurisdictions. Then there are the common law English-speaking Caribbean jurisdictions, the civil jurisdiction ones, such as Dominican Republic or Cuba, for instance. So there is an interesting mix of two types of legal systems, Brandy. And as an IP expert in the Caribbean, one must navigate the system and guide our clients with a strategy. For example, it's still possible to extend UK registrations for trademarks, for instance, to Turks and Caicos. In Guyana, only UK registrations for service marks can be extended, and UK registrations are extendable in Anguilla, BVI, and Bermuda, but it's not possible in Belize, Barbados, and Trinidad, for instance. And going a bit into depth about trademarks, the Bahamas has a local classification system. So one must know exactly what the operation of the law is in all of these countries in order to be able to guide clients adequately. Yeah. And mind you, Brandy, that many of these Caribbean islands have shed their UK dependency over the years, but it has taken them so long to change their age legislation. And I mentioned earlier Bermuda, because their laws, their current laws, date back to the 1970s. And only now recently, they're in the process of updating their 15-year-old legislation. So Brandy, technically, Wow. Yeah, it took Bermuda 50 years to update their legislation, and that's pretty impacting.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's, you know, we know that the law sometimes can be a little slow, but that's taking things to a whole new level, right?
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's really funny, but there are some of the islands that are not fully automated when it comes to the IP registries. So this happens, for example, in the Bahamas, Turks and Caicos, Barbados, and Antigua. And I can give you an anecdote that happened to me very recently, because we were instructed to do a search in Antigua, and it took the registry 9 months, Brandy, to find the file.
And oh my gosh.
We kept insisting, you know, what happened to the file? We need to conduct the search because it would be a manual search. And they've simply said, you know, we can't conduct the search until the file turns up and it's lost. Needless to say that the client was very stressed, and they had a hard time appreciating that this is a reality in the Caribbean where things flow slower than normal, and where normally the countries play catch up in everything. And when I say this is, you know, while in Latin America, for example, the legislation is more updated, in the Caribbean, it's not that much, you know, and things are very slow.
It's amazing. It's good for, I think, those brand owners and to really have a partner such as you guys that are really have the pulse on all these different intricacies from region to region, right? To help them navigate through that.
Absolutely. Yes.
Well, let's talk about a bit about the future. I mean, we've talked about obviously those challenges. Let's talk about what do you see as some of the most significant challenges perhaps in the next decade, all right? So these are the challenges that you're facing today. Are there any challenges that you see for the next 10 years coming in this region especially?
Right. One of the main things that's in vogue right now and that everybody's talking about is the protection of artificial intelligence, right? Machine learning, and in the metaverse are the hot topics and challenges that these countries are facing right now. As you know, while the metaverse is so innovative, it's a shared, immersive, you know, virtual space where people can engage in experiences in ways beyond what we can do in the physical world. And I, for instance, created an avatar, but you ask me how to use it, I have no idea what to do with it, you know?
Nice.
And while the metaverse has a great potential, you know, to significantly expand digital economy, it raises a lot of legal issues pertaining specifically to IP protection. And this touches trademarks, patents, copyright ownership, enforcing that licensing and the transfer of information from a company to potential users. So there are various types of IP rights that apply in the metaverse. For instance, copyright law covers virtual objects such as avatars, buildings, and landscapes that are created by users. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, trademark law protects logos and other branding materials used within the virtual world.
Mm-hmm.
While patent law is applicable to technological advancements that arise during the development of the metaverse. And the legislation in all countries must be updated to cover every new form of protection in all fields of technology, Barbie.
I'm glad you mentioned the legislation, right? Because that was one of the questions I had for you. And we were just talking about how in Bermuda, 50 years before they made a change. So how will they handle these technological advances? How do you see this region, legislation and the laws adapting to these things such as the metaverse and AI and changing those laws if they're so slow in adapting? Like, how do you see that?
You know, Brandy, currently in the legal framework for protecting IP in the metaverse and artificial intelligence is based on various international treaties and agreements. Mm-hmm. For example, there's the Berne Convention, which establishes the minimum standards for copyright protection in most countries around the world. Additional agreements have been adopted to adapt to the digital environment, including the IP Copyright Treaty. So a lot of these treaties regulate things such as work in digital form in an electronic medium, such as an NFT or a file displayed in the metaverse, which constitutes a reproduction that requires prior approval from the copyright owner, for instance. So therefore, it's very crucial to obtain permission from the copyright holder before creating and displaying any virtual assets based on protected work. So in order for people to be able to protect IP in the metaverse, there are several steps that you can take. First of all, I recommend my clients to register your copyright, your trademark, your patent with the relevant authorities in the countries where the product or the service will be used. Because this provides legal protection and the ability to take legal action against third-party infringers.
Right.
And this is especially challenging in countries such as the Caribbean, where the legislation isn't updated. So we have to navigate and find a creative way of protecting. For example, artificial intelligence may not be protected adequately in the Caribbean, but we could go ahead and protect, for instance, through trademark law, or we could do through copyright.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to understanding how, for example, software is protected, like in the US, software can be patented. But in Costa Rica, it's not protected through patent work. It's protected by copyright. So every instance is different.
Are there any, I told you I was going to come back around to this. Talk to me. Are there any creative ways that you go about, I guess, any avenues that you have to get really creative for your customers in order to get them the protection they need for their IP?
Absolutely, yes. Well, there's many forms of IP. For example, if we're talking about a specific trademark, we could do 3D registrations of the mark. We come across and do the copyright registration. And if it's possible, we talk about where their main markets are, discuss what the use of a registered right is, what the local requirements are. For instance, the use requirement in different jurisdictions is absolutely diverse. So while in some countries it may be 3 years, it could be 5 years post-registration. So once you actually protect something, that's where the real work starts, Brandy. Mm-hmm. Because you register it, but it's not a monopoly for the rest of your life. You have to use your work. And if you, for example, have an invention, you successfully obtain a patent registration, you have to ensure that if you're not going to use it, then you're able to license it to third parties who can put it to good use, because at the end of the day, innovation drives the world. And this is absolutely important.
Absolutely. Very well put. We've already discussed how this region of the world is very complex. Are there any elements that stand out to you as differentiators in terms of success for an IP strategy for this region?
Elements. Well, particularly in this region of the world, it's important to elaborate robust IP strategy worldwide, not only in the Caribbean and Latin America, but it's worldwide. And especially in this region of the world, because like I mentioned before, while in the US, software can be patented, Costa Rica, it's not possible, right? So for example, I usually recommend clients that apply for patents as soon as possible in order to secure their patent rights for the inventions. And in this way, companies can recover the money and earn, you know, revenues by licensing or selling their patents. Also, companies or individuals should employ strategic patenting during patent prosecution. This means basically that they should decide what areas of their invention need to be protected by a patent, because once it's filed, it becomes a public knowledge, right? And this is highly important in order to prohibit competitors to come up with innovations in the same area of a particular emerging technology, Brandy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And also, it's important to assess what type of protection you're going to do, in the sense that if you're going to do it via a contract, in order to not perhaps disclose a lot of the investigation that you've gone through, in order to protect it in-house.
Well, Warren Buffett has said that it's good to learn from your mistakes, but it's better to learn from other people's mistakes.
Absolutely. So,
of course. And based on your experience, do you have any stories, or can you share any mistakes that you've seen companies make or have tended to make when it comes to safeguarding their intellectual property?
Actually, some of the mistakes that companies make are that they become too relaxed in thinking that people might not realize that their invention is so creative that they can use it and then do something new with it. You know, they become too comfortable in a position where they say, okay, I'm using this trademark, but I haven't registered it. You know, and in some countries, it's a first-time file basis. So if you're using a trademark, register it. Protect your creations, because at the end of the day, it's what gives your company value.
Exactly. Yes. And that will allow you to, monetize it even further.
Exactly. Okay. And it's also, you know, lack of planning sometimes. Failure to conduct a comprehensive IP search. You know, you want to, as a company, you want to avoid infringing existing registrations. You need to conduct a search. You need to register your rights, and you need to document your ownership. If you need to do an assignment document, you need to put agreements in place. You need to think about non-disclosure agreements when they're essential, when you are facing the safeguarding of private information. So it's facing non-disclosure agreements, confidentiality agreements, and the filing of your IP rights. And it must be a balanced scheme.
Absolutely. And as you just kind of alluded to there, right, not infringing upon anybody else's, you know, by not doing that search, right? So having put all that work in. So the balancing the need for IP protection along with innovation and creativity is often a challenge. How do you strike that right balance, in your opinion?
Right. I'm of the view, Brandy, that in all organizations, leaders should drive innovation. How do they do this? Well, by developing a culture that fosters creativity, exploration, and risk-taking. And this is necessary to be accompanied by creating a very adequate environment where employees can experiment with new ideas, where they can be creative, where they can take risks. And one of the key ways in which IP law impacts innovation and creativity is precisely by providing legal protection for creative works, including copyrights for literary, artistic, and musical works, and trademarks for brand names, logos, and patents for inventions. However, patents can also have a negative impact on innovation, Brandy, because the process of obtaining a patent is complex and expensive. And this cost often prevents, you know, the smaller companies that have limited budgets or individuals without financial resources from protecting their innovations and patents, right? And so additionally, you know, some research in the field has suggested that too strict patent regulations could inhibit creativity by making it difficult for people to use already existing technology or concepts. No, there are companies that are the patent trolls that hold patents solely to file lawsuits against potential infringers. And another major challenge facing innovators today is that they often use vague claims to file expensive litigation against companies developing new technologies.
It's such a complex landscape there, right? I've often heard too about how incredibly difficult it is to just enforce against patent infringements as well. So, you know, while you have these patent trolls, as you call them, on the flip side of that, you have these small companies that are investing so much money, and then they see it being infringed, and it's incredibly expensive for them to take action then against these infringers. So,
and this is why it's so important, Brandy, to guide companies and smaller companies as well, specifically as to where to file, because it's not a matter of only saying, okay, you have an invention. I'm the law firm. I will recommend that you file in every single country in Latin America. But what if they're not going to be using the patent in all of these countries? You know, a PCT application is very, very appealing, but where will you be using the patent? And knowing that you need to perhaps enforce it in all these countries, you need to be backed by a strategy.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Love the idea of backing into a strategy. Let's look into our crystal ball for a second and look at the future. Let's not get too far. Let's go like 5 years from now. How do you see the IP protection landscape sort of evolving? And tell me, how do you see your role perhaps changing, or maybe some of the things that you're doing for your clients changing in a few years to come?
Thank you for this question, Brandy. It's a really good question because it's something that I constantly think about. The future of IP is developing by the minute, you know, and it is uncertain as to where we will be in the IP world in 5 years. But I do know that perhaps the IP legal system should have developed in a way that IP rights are easier to protect in countries where it is rather slow today, such as the Caribbean. So basically, I would like to see newer technologies coming into the IP legal sphere, and I would hope that the IP registries in the region of the Caribbean are more automated, allowing users to have information at a click of a mouse, Brandy, which is not the norm currently. As an IP professional, I hope to continue to be a part of the innovation scheme in helping companies devise IP strategies in the protection of their IP rights. Artificial intelligence is important, but I don't think that us IP lawyers will disappear and be wiped off of the face of the legal world, Brandy. To the contrary, we become more necessary by the minute.
Yeah, I think that that is for certain. Yes, it's here. The AI is here, but it's more of a new way to operate. It's not the answer. And I don't think it's 100% taking over everything.
I agree with you. Absolutely.
We just need to learn how to use it. That's all. Now, lastly, before we end it here, you've talked about IP strategies for IP professionals out there, for some of these smaller brand owners. What three pieces of actionable advice would you give them in order to navigate the future of IP protection?
Yes, thank you. IP is by nature an international practice. So in order to have proper IP protection and in order to be a good IP professional in the IP field, I would recommend that you are focused on the academic field, which is important. Yes, read, understand, update your knowledge in IP, not only, you know, in reference to your country, but also in relation to neighboring jurisdictions' legislation. So this is my first piece of advice. Passion. You must have a passion for what you're doing, and IP requires this. So it's just a starting point. You also need a variety of knowledge to understand your client's needs. You have to always stay updated and keep learning in order to give good advice to clients and guide them along the way. So you need to know a lot about most areas of IP. And this is very important because a good lawyer must learn about science, arts in general, and you need to hack down on the legal part of it as well. And this empowers you to provide comprehensive, well-rounded advice to clients. And going back to what I mentioned in the beginning, to the international aspect of IP, this means essentially that in order to acquire more knowledge, we must attend conferences. Because at the conference, they have different sessions where you can learn. And at the same time, you get to meet colleagues. And for young lawyers, this can be very overwhelming, Brandy. You come to a conference and such as INSO, for example, which happens in May of each year, and you're faced with 11, 12,000 people attending and you're frozen there thinking, what do I do? And I can summarize the process in a single word, and that word would be jump. You have to take a leap of faith. One can't stand at the end of a cliff and sulk and wonder what if, you know, success doesn't just happen overnight. As professionals, we all have a gift, and each gift is different. You need to understand what your gift is, know how to network in this career that you are in, and develop that. Clients really, really appreciate dealing with a well-rounded professional that continues learning and becomes a leader in the IP field.
I love that how you put that everybody has the gift and you need to identify that gift. And you're right, just jumping in and learning and asking questions and networking and learning from individuals like yourself, like we're doing now, like hopefully our audience is taking away. I've certainly have learned a lot from this discussion. I'm sure our audience has as well. That does, by the way, bring us to the end of the chat, Gabriela. And I can't thank you enough for this insightful conversation. I, like I said, have learned quite a bit about Latin American Caribbean IP rights and protection. Now, if our audience, anybody would like to get in touch, learn more about ePoint, where would they be able to go?
Thank you for this question, Brandy. I can be found on LinkedIn as Gabriela Bodden. Or you can also go to my company website, which is www.epoint.com. And well, I would like to take this opportunity to thank you so much, Brandy. I really enjoyed our talk.
Likewise. And to our listeners, thanks again for joining us today. I hope that you found this conversation interesting and informative. Let's keep the conversation going on our next episode.
Thanks for listening to the Future of IP Protection podcast brought to you by Mark Vision. If you enjoyed today's show, please do us a favor and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And if you'd like to learn more about how Mark Vision can help you transform your IP protection strategy, visit us at markvision.com. Thanks again, and I'll catch you on the next episode.